You are listening to the Marty Leeds Mathematical Radio Hour, where we discuss myth, math, spirituality, philosophy, and much, much more. www.thesyncbook.com. Hey everybody, Marty here. Thanks for tuning in once again. Hope everyone is feeling well, staying positive, and living life. It's crazy out there, and sometimes the only thing that can keep you sane in this world is talking through these things with your fellow man, and that is kind of what my guest and I did this evening. I had a nice casual conversation with a guy I've known about through various friends and acquaintances online. He was big into the energy movement, Tesla, Coral Castle, and things like that, and it was just good to chat with him, not really knowing where it was going to go. So we're just going to dive right in here. Our guest tonight is sacred geometrical artist Josh Toms, and the musical guest is It's Not Night, It's Space. Thank you for listening to this broadcast from The Sync Book Radio. If you enjoyed this episode, there's so much more content waiting for you at thesyncbook.com. Tune in to our other Sync Book Radio programs, 42 Minutes, Always Record, The Marty Leeds Mathematical Radio Hour, Synchronize, Pentimental, and Sync Quick News. Our newest episodes are always free, and members get access to our full archive of over 600 hours. You'll find all of this, as well as our books and videos, at thesyncbook.com. Our guest tonight is Josh Toms. Josh has lived his entire life in Colorado, observing nature's beauty and using this study as the cornerstone to question reality. Influenced heavily by the architectural feats of Edlied Scallon's Coral Castle and the work of Nikola Tesla, has led Josh deeply into the studies of geometry and magnetism. Josh has created numerous pieces of art based on mathematical ratios encoded within sacred architecture, as well as in nature itself, and you can view his creations at facebook.com/JToms Art. So without further ado, let's get pious with Josh Toms.
Can you hear me?
I can. How's it going, man?
It's going good. Have we officially met?
No, I don't think so.
All right, well, it's good to meet you, Marty.
Yeah, it's good to meet you too, man. No, I just know you from online and that sort of thing, so yeah, it's great to meet you.
All right, thanks for having me on your, what is this, a podcast?
Yes, it's the Marty Leeds Mathematical Radio Hour, where we discuss myth, math, spirituality, and philosophy.
All right. That's awesome, dude. And could you link me at some point so I can share it?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, this is this probably won't go up till actually like next Wednesday or something, but
sure.
Yeah, it'll be cool.
Yeah, so, that's cool, man.
I've actually already started recording. I think I'm just going to go for it. Is that cool?
Hey, that works great for me.
Yeah, I figured would this be kind of casual and everything. So,
I'm an artist, man. I'm all about being casual. I'm not that formal.
Yeah. So, you're in Colorado, right?
Yes, I'm born and raised in Teller County, just west of Colorado Springs.
Okay. Yeah. What do you? I love Colorado, by the way. I got a few friends in Durango. I got a friend in Durango, a few friends in Denver. And then I used to squat in Estes Park a few summers. So, and hiked all around the Rocky Mountain there. It's absolutely beautiful.
Yeah, when I get some free time, I like to go backpacking. And it's just so great to get out and away from people and be in touch with nature. That's, that's like my religion.
It's interesting that you say that, because I think a lot of the people that get into these sorts of areas are conservationists, or they absolutely love getting outdoors and getting into the thick of it. There's something about that.
Well, we'll have to talk about that conservation stuff. I've been working on a new avenue lately, and it involves mushrooms.
Well, let's just dive into it. Why not? Let's just talk about it right now.
Well, a lot of people know me because of my energy pursuits with Coral Castle or Nikola Tesla and stuff like that as an artist. But really where it's been for me lately is remediation and a man named Paul Stamets. I'll be dropping names as we're talking. And these names are people and their personas with a lot of information, and you guys need to take the time to look it up yourself. because I can't really go into the depth of each one of these people's work. But with Paul Stamets, he's just talking about how there's 10 million species on this planet and 5 million of them are mushrooms and molds and, you know, stuff that we don't always see. I think it's a real interesting thing to research is just how we can use biological materials that have already been here through millions of years and to use them for our own goals in society. We're going to need to have this understanding if we're also going to become more symbiotic with nature so we don't just burn the planet like, the cutting of the rainforest, you know, that's a perfect example. Do we want to cut the whole Amazon rainforest or do we want to cut a third of it? Where is our limit on this kind of stuff? I'm pretty conservative on a lot of things. I want to conserve nature too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Paul's work is talking about basically the regeneration of forests through sporulation, right?
Yeah, and just also the decomposition of materials. You know, the mushrooms I was growing recently, I'm just an amateur at this point. But I'm having a lot of fun with it because you see results from taking stuff that really was free. I got some hay. I did some blue oyster mushroom growing. And, you know, it was food that I could grow in the wintertime in Colorado. I had fresh mushrooms in February, just a week ago. It's great. You know, it's kind of that sustainability idea where we all kind of need to be able to provide for ourselves, even in like an emergency or something. Uh-huh. If we could shift how our daily lives were in a way where there was more local food, I guess, and we can use what we already have that we're in a way kind of throwing away. Mm-hmm. Sawdust is one example. You know, all the sawmills, all the construction. Construction's the biggest waste out there.
I mean, how I see it is that, like, basically nature is, of course, the best teacher. And it seems like if we're going to make any sort of advances, whether that's technological advances, advances in our own consciousness, advances in social reorganization, these sorts of things, that the best teaching is going to come from nature. Would you agree with that?
I completely agree with that.
Yeah.
I follow that as a mantra from a friend of mine. His name is John DePew. He pretty much told me that nature is the best teacher out there. So he's somebody I look up to and I learn a lot of information from him. But when he tells me that nature is the teacher too, you know, it's kind of, we all need to be humble in that this universe is vast and beyond our understanding. So, you know, I think it's a kind of a gratitude feeling that you end up getting when you become humbled by the expansiveness of it all.
Yeah, the humility that comes with investigating all these sorts of things, because that's what I found, that there's a certain humility. And one of the things you have to come to is the recognition that you can't know it all. Like any really intelligent person really actually knows the limitations of his own intelligence, right?
Yeah, sometimes I get, my brain starts, it gets frustrating because there's so many different aspects in science that I want to put my heart and soul into it because it's so fascinating, but there's only so much time, there's so much brain power. I mean, that's really time. That's the base of it. How much can you think in a second? Like how much are you actually going to think in that time? And then how much are you going to do with that time? Mm-hmm. You know, you can think up all these things, but you can't ever show people what you've been thinking until you do something with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, bring it into manifestation. Yeah. What do you do for work? You were originally you built circuit boards, right? Is that?
Well, I worked for 5 years doing circuit board manufacturing. So I learned CNC machines, chemical plating, photo imaging, electronics. I'm actually a two-time college dropout for the two things I love, geometry, which the first time I dropped out was for video game design. I was going to go to school to learn 3D graphic design and make games. But you know, life does its thing. And then my other schooling was electrical engineering, but I dropped out of that because of the work I've learned at Coral Castle. But where I'm at now is kind of, it's almost synchronistic. It's kind of interesting. But I work at a stone cutting place where we do granite countertops.
Really?
Yeah. And I program for CNC machines. We have four of them. They're Titan 1800 machines. And they're, you know, very precise machines. We have, it's like a giant 3D printer. They're half the size of a room. And there's an overhead laser, and it projects down the information that I'm programming out on there with a DXF file, G-code sent. And pretty much we lay it out, cut the stone, and we put it into people's houses. It's a mom-and-pop shop. It's you know, it's been a great job for me. It's hard work, though, I'll tell you. It is the modern equivalency of building pyramids. We're working with stone. This is why Coral Castle is fascinating for me, is because I cut stone every day. I understand how hard it would have been to actually accomplish the I almost cussed on your
you
show.
You can say shit, whatever you want to say. Have
well, it's incredible shit. I mean, that's pretty much what it is. The Coral Castle, it's been a focus of my, I mean, it's a big part of my awakening as an individual. To understand, you know, a mystery. Like, the more I've learned about it, the more I understand it's more science. But, you know, science and mystery and, what was the original science was actually called philosophy. So it's kind of delving into philosophy at a certain point. You look at these experiments and you philosophize what you're perceiving. And somehow my jobs have landed me into a certain frame of reference where I can, I don't know, somehow I'm,
Your work reflects your passions, and it wasn't something that you really planned, right? This was, like you were saying, this sort of like synchronistic, right?
It was just how it happened. You know, the family was in the business for the granite, and I was having other friends' family that was in the circuits. So it was almost all set up for me.
Yeah. You know, it's funny that you're saying this. I mean, to cut you off there, but I was just thinking of this the other day when I was, you know, when I was writing my first book. I had been working with CAD programs my entire life. You know, I actually still do. I work in a sign shop, and I worked in sign shops, cut decals and stuff like that for my whole life. And for years, I had been working with geometry, circles, you know, squares, proportion scales, the ratios, that sort of thing, without ever really even recognizing what it is I was doing. And then ultimately, you know, basically what I was doing was working with the foundations of sacred geometry, and ultimately these things came into play. And I'd been doing this for 8 years at that point or whatever it was, and it was just like, it was just so amazing. It's just so interesting how life works in these weird ways like that, you know?
Yeah, I definitely, I'm observing it more and more. It's, the universe is beyond, you know, what we consider a genius. Mm-hmm. You know, the universe actually brings into the universe geniuses like Einstein and Tesla and Ed Leedskalin. They're geniuses, but the universe created them. So obviously the universe must be of some level of intelligence. That's the thing we've really been discussing for a long time, is it just science's view where it's all random, or is it the religious view where it's all set out and everything? What if it's kind of both?
Yeah, you know, exactly. I always thought that was really funny that somebody could even come to the conclusion that the universe is unintelligent. It's like, okay, well, how, you know, I posted this internet meme this one time. It showed a picture of Richard Dawkins, and it says, "Man born from nature uses his own intelligence to inform you how unintelligent nature is." Like, how That's just the, it makes no logical sense whatsoever to for me to for anybody in my opinion to look at nature itself or the universe itself as unintelligent.
Well, I mean, we all have our opinions, but I'll say that when nature is in harmony, is it the most intelligent? But if it is in disharmony, it does become a locust swarm. It becomes crazy. It becomes unintelligent. It does, in a way, because, you know, then you have mass extinctions and everybody loses. That's not good. I'm more concerned with the extinction level of animals than I am with climate change. Mm-hmm. I'm more concerned with toxic chemicals causing these extinctions, you know, BP oil spill, Fukushima. It's crazy out there these days. I'm a very expansive person. I like to be well informed and I want to be critical of that information, but I also want to go to the truth that feels right for me.
Mm-hmm. And so you just mentioned Fukushima, this sort of thing. This was obviously these sorts of things are what sort of sent you into the pathway of looking into free energy and stuff like that. Actually, can we talk about this? Is something you did a few years back, the Million Volt March. You hoped that you were kind of sort of pivotal in this. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Well, it was a project that I did with the Tesla Science Foundation. We've pretty much what I did was, I went out to Philadelphia and marched in front of Independence Hall for, you know, essentially awareness of the energy problems our world has. Then we went and I spoke at the Global Breakthrough Energy Movement, and we had a little march there and had a bunch of figures. Geez, there were so many people in that picture. If you go to globalbreakthroughenergymovement.com, I'm sure they've got the picture somewhere. Foster Gamble, Jason Verbelli. I mean, there was just so many different people in that picture. If you know the energy community, it's a pretty, in my point of view, it was a pretty important time to have everybody kind of together showing how big this is becoming. You know, it's every person in that picture probably had an experiment in their garage of some sort. It's a giant movement. And my talk at the Global Breakthrough Energy Movement was called the Creative Energy Renaissance, because I see that we're on a fulcrum in a historical point of time where we are either going to go towards a police state and fascist tyranny, or we're going to go to the Enlightenment and the Renaissance and the upliftment of humanity to a new level, like 1776 and the American Revolution. We're going to understand what liberty is. But, you know, this is, I guess, the human condition. We always put ourselves into a corner before we blossom. It's, mm-hmm. you know, it's that's all the energy of a plant is to flower.
Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, we do seem like we're at that crossroads right now, whether it's going to go one way or the other. How hopeful are you?
Well, I'm feeling a lot like Oppenheimer lately. You know, I've parted paths with a lot of people from the energy community. I'm kind of just doing my own thing lately because I'm kind of looking at the world in a more complexity. Dr. Joseph P. Farrell is a good example of kind of the point of view I'm getting at these days. You know, we're going to have the possibilities of free energy technology or any of that kind of stuff where we're able to become more uppity or whatever you want to call it. It's going to have a lot of responsibility on us as people and as individuals. You know, if if this energy is as powerful as they say in Tesla's Wardenclyffe Tower, you know, it's going to bring in energy to this world that it could be devastating. We may have already seen the act happen on September 11th. You can research Dr. Judy Wood to see where I'm coming from this point of view. But we're having funding for this kind of stuff for weaponry. That's not the only thing humanity does with technology. I mean, the first thing we did with AC power, Tesla, one of the first things we did was make an electric chair. It's just what we do. We make weapons, and it concerns me what we would do with this kind of technology if it was to, I don't know.
Yeah, like, because when I haven't done as nearly as much studying with like Tesla as guys like yourself have and that sort of thing. But when I think of free energy, I remember him basically saying that the idea was that we could just take this out of thin air, essentially, because that we're taking the electricity of the universe, the energy of the universe. And to me, it seems like it's an intrinsic or like latent ability or something that or some understanding of simple natural laws that anyone could have access to. That's what free energy would be, not necessarily a technology. So when I think of free energy coming from a device or a piece of technology or just from, you know, whatever the natural world itself, I automatically think of the ability, as you're saying, to hijack that technology, you know, and use it for evil, albeit by terrorists or government. Sometimes I can't tell the difference which one is which, but you know what I mean? That's an enormous fear. So when we look at the free energy movement, I mean, do you think that this technology is out there and it's being stifled by governments? Do you think that we should even be pursuing this in one way?
Well, Ed Leed Scalland actually had a patent in the patent office back in 1945, and there's no records of that. So his stuff got sequestered. There's a lot of people talking about how Nikola Tesla's work got sequestered. This is not just, you know, a scientific world. This is a socio-political, social-engineered world.
The implications is that this was, you know, this free energy or whatever has been discovered, in your opinion, and has been, like you were saying, sequestered. This has been taken by certain people who had different motives than the upliftment or enlightenment of man, right?
Well, let's just talk about the Nazi Bell project and what the Nazis were doing in World War II. They were spinning mercury up, and they had thorium and all this other crazy stuff. You can look into it yourself. But they were pretty much trying to create free energy. And they said it was war decisive. That's how the classification of it was. And they didn't even release this to the public until after the fall of the Berlin Wall in the 1980s. So that's how quiet it was. It was quiet from 1946 45. Mm-hmm. But, you know, to the 80s, where when the Berlin Wall came down. So, it's crazy. I don't know exactly. I know that we have had technology like this in the past. By if we want to believe our records, one of the records is the Bible, and it talks about the Ark of the Covenant, and the Ark of the Covenant had some sort of white powder inside of it. And nowadays in physics, you can look at his name, Sir Lawrence Gardner. He's a historian. He's got plenty of books talking about what I'm talking about right now. And pretty much we've rediscovered this white powder and what it is. It's a superconductor. It's a nano superconductor. And this stuff, they're able to transmute it into different materials. So what's going on is technology is allowing us, and this stuff is allowing us to create technology based around it, which, you know, the philosophers talked about transmuting lead into gold. The Philosopher's Stone is kind of what this is. They're discovering that the base materials, obviously, it's at its base level, like Ed Leeds-Gallen said at Coral Castle, it's magnetic current. And John DePue talks about this. He says that it's three things in this universe. Three things is all you need. So everything comes from the three. These three things. And if you look at a magnet, there's two poles and the middle. And, you know, nature just does its thing. Sometimes I really feel at a loss for words for a lot of things. I'm a very observational-oriented person.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of my artwork is geometry. I observe experiments constantly. I'm obsessed with experiments. I always have something going on, and it's time, transition of time. It's the observation of change. That's the stuff that I see coming for humanity. Is there is going to be a lot of good from this, but as we understand and refine this new science as it approaches, we're going to have to deal with the other side of humanity.
Whenever I, you know, as an artist yourself, like whenever I look into nature, I see a creative, artistic element within nature. You know, we hear a lot about people saying, oh, look at the wonders of science. Science has brought us so much wonderful technology. Science has done so much for medicine, this and that. And, you know, I think we almost need to make a distinction between science and research and development. Like when people are in research and development, these are creative types. These are artistic people. It's not some fucking guy in a lab coat working damned equations all day. These are creative people. In fact, I'm sure you know this quote, but it's a Steve Jobs quote. It's something to the effect of like, the people who created the Macintosh didn't see a division between science and art. In other words, mathematics is really a liberal art if you look at it from a slightly different perspective. I don't know if you know that quote or not, but I mean, how true is that? I mean, scientists didn't bring us computers. No, you had artists bringing us computers, you know, and we, a lot of times modern people attribute that to science. So it seems to me that should we not assume that like the same thing goes for free energy, that these are going to be creative people, greater understandings in physics, that we're going to get a greater understanding in physics from creative people, these sorts of arenas, that the major discovery is going to come not from necessarily within the scientific community, but from artists who are scientifically minded, if that makes sense.
Yes, it does. And I would point people in a direction of an archetype of the Renaissance. So it is a historical harmonic reflection, you know, where history goes in ripples. Leonardo da Vinci, he is a perfect archetype of what you're describing.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I mean, he was an inventor, discoverer, right? But he was an artist first and foremost, right?
Yep. And you know what? He was paid by the Vatican, and he also created war machines. So we have to understand that there is the two sides of creativity. I don't mean to be a drag on that, but I think a lot of people aren't really talking about that kind of stuff. Like, we need to, as an artist, I see it. I've experienced hardship in life. I mean, you don't just become an artist. It's kind of a transition. You know, some people, everybody comes to art in a different way, but usually it's their life's tale. Poets are the same, art of all kind, not just painting. But it shows you the full spectrum of the depth of reality. You know, you don't really understand something until you experience it firsthand. And the artists are the ones that historians go to re-glimpse the historical imprint, you know, that was laid upon the canvas.
Mm-hmm.
the mind is the artist's the painting is the artist's mind's projection of the inner heart of whatever they are perceiving in their time and location. There's the artists were the first, you know, I don't know who was first, agriculturalists or artists.
Yeah. That's a good point.
I don't know. Maybe somebody knows, but it's, you know, even agriculture isn't art. You know, you have to put them in rows and line it up. And
I think anything that's worth doing is worth making an art of it.
Permaculture is an art.
Yeah.
Aquaponics. Each of these sciences, in my opinion, that create and are able to give back positively, I think that's where we got to go with things. I did the circuit board industry, and I see the real toxicity of that industry. It's rough. And there's a lot of acids, a lot of waste, spent sludge. And it really opened my eyes to just what China is dealing with in their own economy. We did it in the 1900s with the Industrial Revolution. But nowadays, these chemicals for palladium, platinum, rhodium, all these fancy metals and all this super microchip stuff, it is poisoning our earth doing this stuff. There was some guy able to pull plastic out of the atmosphere in LA, some student I read somewhere.
Sure.
That's kind of crazy. I think either we got to go to the stars. We've got to be able to start terraforming planets and getting away from each other and finding some harmony on this planet, and give ourselves some space too, because this dense population stuff, I don't think people are happy in that kind of life. Maybe some people are, but I definitely do not feel comfortable being around a metropolis of people sometimes.
Maybe let's talk about, since you had mentioned this before, let's talk about, this is something that I know that you've investigated quite a lot, is Ed Lead Scallon. Let's talk about, can you give us a background into, like, who this guy is, what's the mystery surrounding him, maybe about Coral Castle, that sort of thing?
Well, he's a immigrant from Latvia. He came over here in the 20s and looked for some land. They say, these are, you know, the stories. He was looking for land. He ended up getting tuberculosis and found some people in Homestead, Florida who would, they helped him to heal himself, to get away from tuberculosis somehow. And he was able to live another 20 or 30 years. I'm a very, technical person. I've really been looking at the technical side of things. And, you know, the details of his story, I've heard them so many times, but I always tend to forget the real. So I want people to go look it up for themselves. But he built a castle in Homestead, Florida. He did it all himself. And it's just amazing work. He had a sundial there that had a obelisk pointed with crosshairs at the North Star, and he would trace the sun's path across the sky, and the fact that our entire solar system really is focal pointed at the North Star, where we're spinning, everything's spinning. So Ed was showing, you know, magnets spin in his book, Magnetic Current. You can go to the Coral Castle web page and you can get their booklet with all the experiments, his books. He advised people not to get his books unless they were really wanting to experiment. And I'll tell you, his 18-page book, I still look at it and it's, you know, it's like reading relativity in a way, but you have to be able to perform the experiments. It's not even a theoretical book. It's just a book of experiments, and you have to be able to understand how he's expressing his experiments to you. There's a man named Scott Lang. He lives in Australia. He wrote a book with pictures and everything for every experiment in Ed's book. He's taught me quite a bit from those. It's just a picture book, something that kids could be taught, you know. I mean, that really is where this is going, is one day. I know when I was a kid, I was really, I have fond memories of those experiments in class in science where they liquid nitrogen froze a banana and they threw it on the ground. Just those, the classroom experiments that kids can learn this stuff, and it's better that they learn, in my view, through experiments. I think telling people how the universe works, I think we should show people experiments, and that explains how the universe works.
Because isn't this, ultimately, this is where true knowledge comes from, because it comes from Mother Nature itself, because experiential knowledge is something that you gain when somebody just tells you something. That's not really knowledge, if you know what I'm saying, right? You actually have to experience it. When you look at magnetic current, have you done any of the experiments within there? Because I've never read it. I've heard it's really difficult to read. What's your take?
I've done quite a bit of experiments. I've learned from the three wise men, John DePew, Jerry Smith, and Scott Lang. They're three men that changed my point of view.
What is Scott Lang's? He wrote a book on all the experiments. What is his, you know, conclusion? What does he find?
He finds that we're missing half of the spectrum, just like Ed talks about in his book, where physicists are obsessed with one side of the spectrum of the Maxwell equations, and the electricians are obsessed with the other side of the Maxwell equations. But what really they're missing is that it's both, and they're also missing that they're connected. This is one thing that science is going to really expand upon, is when that, you know, everybody's having these huge breakthroughs in physics, huge breakthroughs in engineering, all these breakthroughs in their courses, but the creative minds of this world see the distinguishing connecting factors and bring them together in a matrix, a lattice effect, and they can create some sort of a singularity. I'm not saying there is a singularity, because I see the universe as these three things, a positive, negative, and the neutral particles. And, you know, I don't.
And that comes from, I mean, this is something that's just so universal too, because this is something that's observational. It's you experience it all the time, because in one way we have a reflection of that just in time itself, with past, present, and then you know the future. It's almost, you have the positive, the negative, the north and the south, and then the middle. So it's like, it to me, it's like just even breaking things down that simply, it's like, okay, well, we can see that this is how nature works magnetically. This is how it works throughout time. Maybe we should focus our investigations into these sorts of ideas as the underpinning matrix, if you will.
Yeah. And John DePew always talks about how it's these three things. Well, you've got two poles on a battery. Well, when the two poles connect on a battery, then you've got energy. You can't just power with one side of the battery. So that's where the science is. You've got those two poles of the battery. And this is kind of what Ed's talking about. And he would tap the battery with a copper wire, the two ends. And he put compasses around this wire and watched how the compass would flip. He teaches you how to make a compass in the book, which is You just get a U-shaped magnet and you put a needle between the two forks and you pull it out and that's it. You know, it's just very simple things. And if you do it right, he says that if you channeled the energy in the right path, you can get perpetual power. Well, one of his experiments is a transformer where you have two primary leads, where there's just the same wrappings of coil. You've got 100 wraps on one side, 100 wraps on the other, in a right-hand twist. He always talks about right-hand twist. And he runs the, he taps it, you know, taps the wire on the battery, turns it on, and you have a keeper on this U-bolt, because that's, it's a circular transformer with iron. It's a solid iron core with a, it's a tuning fork, but then you have a keeper which connects the ends of the tuning fork. Well, when you run the current through that, that keeper will stay there. And if you pull that keeper off at any point, you can pull it off and you connect battery or the coil leads to a light bulb, you can light it. But, you know, you have to experiment and do it first. But what I'm explaining is that you can essentially create a magnetic capacitance, they want to call it. You know, there's all these terms and stuff for what's happening, but how I see it, you put the energy in, it stays in there, and you can get it out. And it's that coil, the base of his coil is actually similar to the coil that they use in old televisions. So it's technology that we've had. This stuff isn't, I mean, it's been around. We've just kind of missed it. And I think Ed Leitz-Gallen, Nikola Tesla, John DePue, Jerry Smith, he's another person. He is a engineer and he does work for Master Lock. So he designs locks, like these futuristic locks. But he's big into Coral Castle, and these guys, they just have this old man, I call it like this old man knowledge, where you, or old woman knowledge, you get to a certain age and you know something about something, and we should listen to you. Well, these guys know a whole lot about Coral Castle, and I think this world needs to listen to these three men at some level. They're all artists. Each of them is a musician. It's funny. Always a musician, artist, experimenter. There's a persona for what a creator is.
Yeah, you're a musician, right? You play guitar or something, or bass?
I do play guitar. Yeah,
that's interesting. So yeah, you know, it's so funny you're saying that, because I just spoke to Max Egan. He's a musician. I had Andy Laub on. He's a documentarian, you know, nature lover, that sort of thing. He's a musician. John Major Jenkins I had on. He's a musician. Just had Edward Nightingale on. He's a musician. It's like, and I asked Max this. Like, how is the pursuit of like harmony within music helped you find this, lead you on the path of this, find harmony not only within yourself but also within, you know, the outside world, if you will?
Well, I'm a blues player, and you know, my family was raised me around bluegrass, so I play some bluegrass, and you know, a lot of those songs are not the happiest songs, but they got good feeling to them. And what I found is sometimes at my hardest times in life, I'm not the strongest person at times, because I've been through a lot. So when I start getting, you know, anxious and concerned about things, you know, I internalize things very easily. And I found that music it led me to meditation. It helped me clear my mind to get it off of the beehive, the chatter. You know, Nikola Tesla talked about how his brain would just swarm with ideas. And I I can completely understand where he's coming from with this, and you know, I've got the internet, so my brain gets really, really crammed sometimes, and music is just a good way for me to clear it out and start fresh again. Like, kind of, it's kind of like a good reset button for me.
I was just thinking of this. Towns Van Zandt. He had this quote where he said, "There's heaven, purgatory, hell, and the blues, and I'm just trying to climb up from the blues." That is funny. So when we see the chatter in our brains, and a lot of times it's hard to focus and things like that. And you said meditation. What sort of meditation do you do? Long walks? Do you transcendental meditate?
Sometimes wrapping a coil is a meditation.
Absolutely. You
sit there and wrap a coil. It takes hours. Mm-hmm. I do walks, like the backpacking I talked about. Experimenting is a meditation for me, because, you know, if you're sitting there looking at a vial of acid and you're putting materials into that acid and you're watching the little bubbles come off of the materials as it's dissolving into its new state, you're just sitting there with your eyes looking at it. I'm not judging what's happening. What I'm doing is I'm seeing it for the best that I can see it. I find myself meditating sometimes just before I go to sleep, where I'm lying flat on my back and I just focus on a point between my eyes, and I've gotten to the point where I can feel a sensation there sometimes. And, you know, I see this purple, like, glowing. It's like a heartbeat that kind of pulses sometimes. And it, you know, it's a completely dark room I'm in. So I've learned to clear myself the best I can with what I've got at the time, I guess. You know, sometimes it's just throwing your iPod on at work and having to listen to music while you're getting through the grind.
Mm-hmm. So what ultimately led in your life? You said you had, like, difficult, you know, things that happen and sort of like that. What led you to all this stuff, that your foray into math and, you know, sacred geometry and all this sort of stuff? Was it just a general path, or was there anything, like, one thing that sort of, like, you know, thrusted you in this direction?
Well, I really was interested in science as a kid, and I got kind of distracted with that, with just different friends, and then there was pretty much one whole side of a family died in like a year and a half, so there was a strong family, and there's a divorce too at one point, and you know, it's what a lot of people in America deal with. I'm not saying that I've felt worse than any person. I have a very empathetic point of view in this earth, and it's because I've been beaten down. I wouldn't be surprised if more came. It's like kind of the law of Murphy, you know. Something bound is to happen in our lives. That's why we have insurance. It's, you know, and you crawl up out of it, and that's, you know, I every time I crawl up out of it, I find myself a better person. So it's the yin yang kind of thing. There's the blissful moments where you're with the one you love, or the moments where you're creating the most amazing masterpiece you've ever created in your life. Or, you know, when families are torn apart and there's loss of life. It's the balance of the two, though. You have to be able to understand that they're both there to help you find the harmony between the two. And what that is just acceptance. You've got to accept things as they are and as they come, and be the best that you can. I like to philosophize about how to better myself, and I'm far from perfect. I've made a lot of mistakes. I've had anger in my heart because of just listening to what's going on politically in this country. We're kind of at that point where there's going to be riots. You know, there already are. People are getting upset, and when people lose everything, they're bound to lose it. And, you know, there's resentment in this world. There's all those feelings, and I guess the point is we got to find the harmony between those two. There's good and bad feelings, but, you know, we got to be able to find the balance of the two at some point.
This is such a common theme about, well, even like meditation, M-E-D means middle, you know, even pyramid means fire in the middle, essentially Midos, that sort of thing, about looking at these extremes, positive and negative of a battery, if you will, yin and yang, as you were saying, and bringing them together to unify them. And that becomes like a fundamental philosophy. This idea of the like unity of opposites in the world, how did you first hear about this? Because this was something that I wasn't exposed to until probably like my mid-20s. And as soon as I was exposed to it, I was thought, how in the fuck did I not hear about this when I was 3 years old?
Oh, man. I don't know the exact point. Honestly, I'm thinking of all these times where it kind of pointed you in that direction. It's, you know, it's really easy to distinguish the difference between the sun and the night. But to see the spectrum of the middle, which is what Newton did with the prism, mm-hmm. You have to refine your point of view to understand the depth of the middle. The middle is all that is, but it is obvious, but all that is created of the two things that are coming together to create the all that is. Mm-hmm. I guess that's a very deep question right there. How do you come to discover the middle? That is that's life.
The journey of man, right?
It's life. I mean, you've got to be able to get sunlight, that energy for plants. They got to grow with energy. Everything needs energy in this world, or else it converts into another form of energy. And then it's a good question. I don't have an answer for you.
Hey, you know what? That's an answer. Saying you don't have an answer is an answer, you know? It really is. Some people try to, yeah, you know? So, you just mentioned the sun. And one thing that I was, you know, I kind of grew up with, you kind of grew up with, is this promise of, you know, that everything is going to go solar, that we're going to get all the energy from the sun. Like, have you looked into this so too much? And why does it not seem that we've, like, sort of, you know, gotten over this hump, gotten over the oil industry hump and into solar energy?
Well, just to put it out there, they're trying to even tax solar energy now. Which is funny. But
I heard I'm sorry, I don't want to stop you a second, but I heard my friend told me that in Denver that they made it illegal for you to catch rainwater. Is that true? Do you know if that's true?
It's throughout parts of the state. I know it is because we have all the aquifers. We've got the big mounds of snow on the mountains. We give Arizona their water. We've got water contracts in this state. We're kind of the middle. You know, we're the only state that actually has the all-seeing eye on its seal. That'll tell you.
Really?
But the reason we can't go solar is because it takes more energy to make them than what you get out of them. So, you know, let's say we put all this energy into making a solar-powered plant that would make solar panels. Mm-hmm. Well, you would have to start with some sort of coal power plant. If we're using our technology, you've got to have the energy to create the solar panels, and then you're going to get out the solar panels to make you're going to make less solar panels with every factory if you use the same solar panels. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
You've got 100 solar panels running this solar panel plant. You're going to get like 95 solar panels out of that plant, and then you got to use those 95 for another power. there's something lost there. And John DePew has shared with the world, it's too bad nobody wants to help him out, but his experiment called the Equilibrious Grid, you can look it up on YouTube. It's a bunch of spinning tops, and he is inducing them with this energy, and he is he's able to do something that MIT couldn't replicate. You know, these people, this we've built CERN, but what have we gotten from CERN? Like, can I hold something in my hand that'll make, I mean, what, NASA, we fund money into NASA, and we get, you get a lot from NASA in research and development. It makes things cheaper. You used to not be able to buy aerogel. Now you can buy it online and stuff. It's,
this is a fundamental issue too, because we're not, at least from any sort of government or state, we're not going to get funding for any of these projects that seem, you know, these free energy projects, the people that you've researched. No one's going to get funding from the state from these things, right? I mean, that's pretty much a given.
Well, the only way they'll probably get funded is either to shut their mouth, or if they come work for them in the black budget. And that's what Catherine Austin Fitz talks about. There's a huge system of finance right now that's completely off the books. Mm-hmm. And I'll tell you what, maybe the reason people don't care about this stuff is because maybe they've already got it in the, you know, bomb shelter, military industrial complex. I love America, man. I'm a gun-toting American. But I'll tell you what, we're facing something in this country that, you know, if it turns bad, I'd be afraid for the rest of the world for what we turn into.
Really? You think we're heading in that direction very quickly, right?
Have you seen the social programming in like the Captain America movies lately?
No, honestly, I haven't really kept up on my movies at all. I'm sure it's, well, there though. I hear, you know.
Do me a favor and just watch one of them.
Okay.
You can even look up a movie called Iron Sky. It's about Nazis on the moon. You know, I was talking earlier about the Nazi Bell Project. Mm-hmm. It was war decisive, that technology. Well, a lot of the Nazis went to the Americans. A lot of the Nazis went to the Russians. A lot of scientists survived the war. And they went to countries, and it's, I don't know, there's too much to be told in an hour, I'll tell you, Marty.
Yeah, I know. That's always the difficult thing with these shows, because it's like any of these avenues I'd love to go down. So,
well, I dropped a bunch of names, and people can go look up these names and see the information for themselves. Mm-hmm. I'm just an artist out there doing the best that I can, and, you know, if you guys want to look at my artwork too, go to my Facebook page. I got a Josh Tom's Art Like page you can go to.
Yeah, you have a website too with your artwork that you can buy, right?
I never really have actually sold my artwork. I just do it as a discovery thing for me to understand geometry more. I've given my pieces away to special people in my life, but, you know, I did a few calendar prints so I could go to conferences where I printed up them and paid for my trip and everything. But I hope to start in that direction soon, because the stone industry, it's treated me really well. But I'd like to start creating 3D printed art and painting neon paint on them and giving people glasses. I have this artwork that's all black light and lit, and it's got these optical illusions with the geometry of the Great Pyramid of Giza. You said the middle point. Well, it is the template for the projection of depth That's what the Great Pyramid is. It's depth. So you can create optical illusions with those ratios of depth. So I want to create more. And sometimes when you're working all the time, it's hard to create.
I hear you, man. I feel your pain. So
it's the story of all artists. We've got to stick with it together.
Yeah.
I think artists are the ones that are usually targeted first when societies fall apart too. So we got to speak out and be truthful.
Yeah. Well, Josh, we're about out of time here. So, it's been cool speaking with you, and it's actually nice to finally meet you. I've seen your name around Facebook and, you know, the free energy movement and all that stuff, and I've always wanted to chat with you, and so it's been a lot of fun. So I appreciate you coming on.
Thank you for having me, Marty, and I appreciate the opportunity.
All right. Cool, man. Stay as cool as the Arctic, and maybe if I'm in Colorado sometime, we'll get some coffee or some beers or something.
Yeah, definitely hit me up.
All right, man. Cool. All right. Let's chat soon.
Have a good night.
Peace.
Thanks for listening, everybody. Our outro song is entitled The Gathering and is provided by the band It's Not Night, It's Space, and is off their record Bowing, Not Knowing to What. This track is very Pink Floyd, it's very atmospheric and trippy, and even includes a sample of a Terrence McKenna lecture in it to boot. You can purchase their record at innis.bandcamp.com. I truly appreciate all the listeners who have supported this show over the last several months. Thank you for sharing this show. Thank you for sharing the knowledge. Thank you for the kind words. And thanks to all the guests who have taken the time out of their busy schedule to speak with me. Thanks to everyone at The Sync Book, especially Guillaume and Alec Green, for all their hard work. It's really great to share airspace with such gentlemen and scholars, and I'm a better man for knowing you guys. Be well out there, people. Much love, and always remember, an opinion without pie is just an onion. Thanks.
You've been listening to the Marty Leeds Mathemagical Radio Hour. More information about the work of Marty Leeds can be found at MartyLeeds33.com. You can download his full-length studio record, Opus Medico Musica, from iTunes or Amazon.com. And be sure and check out his books, Pi and the English Alphabet, Volume 1 and 2, and The Peacock's Tales, available at MartyLeeds33.com and Amazon. For hours of free video, check out his YouTube channel at MartyLeeds33. More information about SyncBook Press, SyncBook Radio, or SyncBook Events can be found at thesyncbook.com. If you like this podcast, please support it by becoming a donor. You'll find the donation links under each episode on the website and consider setting up a monthly charge. Thanks so much, and though some people think it's a piece of cake, we all know it's easy as pie.